Morning, everyone. It's a beautiful Monday morning. A word about the agenda. We had to post this agenda by 8:30 Friday morning, and we had thought we would still be doing the minimum wage. We thought we'd have more testimony on Friday, but because we didn't, we were able to have the work session on Friday. So you will see a little bit of a hole in the schedule this morning. We will go to House Bill 2967 first, and apologize for the confusion on that. So I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2967, and I'm going to call forward J.L. Wilson and Norm Proctor, Small Business Association, and J.L. is with NFIB. Yeah. And Madam Chair, can we introduce our staff, please? I'm sorry. Our staff seems to have changed. Yes, I will tell you that Megan Palau is in Fort Lauderdale, Florida this week with, I believe she's gone down there with her father-in-law's crusade, so that's a big event that's happening in Florida this week. And so Patrick will be with us. And Patrick, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Madam Chair. My name is Patrick Brennan. I've been with Committee Services since 1999. This session, I'm serving as Committee Administrator for the House General Government Committee, and that has afforded me a Tuesday-Thursday schedule, which fits right in with your Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and so I'll be sitting in today, and probably Wednesday, either Kara Filsinger or I will be sitting in Wednesday also. And then Megan will always be.
Well, we appreciate it very much that you're willing to work spring vacation.
Oh, absolutely.
Extra hard. Well, welcome, gentlemen, and, Patrick, can you read the summary of the bill?
Sure, I'd be glad to. House Bill 2967 requires agencies to prepare small business economic impact statements before adopting rules. It specifies contents of those impact statements and requires agencies to conduct a regulatory flexibility analysis for the rules with adverse impact on small businesses to determine if there is an alternative regulatory method that would lessen the rules' adverse impact on small businesses while accomplishing the same goals. The bill declares an emergency and takes effect upon passage.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Close and members. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson representing NFIB and am grateful for the opportunity to talk about a subject near and dear to our heart, which is the regulatory environment. And with House Bill 2967, which we've dubbed the Small Business Regulatory Flexibility Act, it is regulation is something that generates a lot of attention, whether it's in this building or on the campaign trail, but also conversely generates some paralysis when it comes to actual solutions or ways to address the issue. So 2967 is our offering as a way to discuss regulatory impacts on small business and how we can perhaps mitigate them. I'm going to introduce to you Norm Proctor, who's with the U.S. Small Business Administration, who came down from Seattle this morning. We're working in tandem on this bill. I'm going to introduce Norm and let him lead off the discussion, and then I'll take you on a step-by-step way through the bill so we can understand this thing together. Thank you.
Well, welcome, Norm. I hope you are finding better weather here than in Washington State, perhaps.
Beautiful here. Although my allergies are kicking up, so if you hear me cough, it's because of the blossoming on the trees.
I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Close, members of the House Labor and Consumer Affairs Committee, I'm pleased to be here today to testify on behalf of House Bill 2967, a measure to create a Regulatory Flexibility Act for Oregon. As JL indicated, my name is Norm Proctor, and I'm a Region 10 advocate in the U.S. Small Business Administration. Region 10 includes Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska, and I'm based in Seattle. My job is to be the independent voice for small business. My only interest is that of the small business owners and their employees. Frequently, that means dealing with the enormous amount of regulations that affect them. That is why I'm pleased to be here today before this committee in support of regulatory flexibility concept in Oregon. This is legislation that will lighten the regulatory burden in Oregon's for small business while still ensuring that important public policy goals are met. The Office of Advocacy was established by federal statute in 1976. While much of the focal point of that legislation relates to authority of the Office of Advocacy to assist small businesses by improving the regulatory practices of the federal government, the primary functions of the office are broad. Our office looks directly at rules and regulation that hinder small business. We are a part of the federal government that stands between unreasonable tax policies or unfair regulations and the small business owners on Main Street. It is our job to make sure that their opinions are heard. We pursue a small business agenda in two ways. First, we work directly with federal agencies to help them find less burdensome alternatives to their proposed regulations and to fight to implement those alternatives. Second, we produce research that shows the value of small business. We know that sound public policy rests on research, so we make sure that policymakers clearly understand the value of small business to the economy and to your communities. The central mission of the Office of Advocacy remains reducing excessive regulatory burden that falls on small business. An advocacy research study called The Impact of Regulatory Costs on Small Business established that small businesses with less than 20 employees spend nearly $7,000 each year per employee just to comply with federal regulations and mandates. That's 60% more than large firms. State and local regulatory burdens simply add to that cost. The key to advocacy's effectiveness in fighting federal regulations that have been the Regulatory Flexibility Act passed by Congress in 1980 and strengthened in 1996. I'm going to call that from now on the RFA, Regulatory Flexibility Act. The premise behind RFA is not that there should be no regulations at all, but rather that regulatory agencies should be acutely aware of the fact that a disproportionate amount of falls of their work, the regulatory falls on small business. Under this law, federal agencies are required to consider the impact of proposed regulations on small entities and to discuss alternative ways to achieve their regulatory objectives without imposing undue burdens. Under RFA, our office has shown time and time again that regulations can be reduced and the economy improved without sacrificing such important goals as environmental quality, travel safety, work safety, and family financial security. By working with federal agencies to implement the RFA, the Office of Advocacy in 2002 saved small businesses over $21 billion, that's $21 billion, in foregone regulatory costs that can now be used to create jobs, buy equipment, and expand access to health care for millions of Americans. Advocacy has recognized that states can do and often do impose significant regulatory burdens for small business. To help address this, our office has drafted model legislation for consideration by states. The model bill mirrors the RFA. Its intent is to foster a climate for small business success in the states so that small businesses will continue to create jobs, produce innovative new products and services, and bring more Americans into the economic mainstream and broaden the tax base. This is not a new idea. Many states have already had passed similar legislation. Unfortunately, Oregon is not one of these states. However, we applaud this effort to provide this important tool to help small businesses deal with the problems of burdensome state regulations. We believe that there are five elements that are contained in the model bill. Successful state regulatory flexibility law should include, one, a small business definition that includes most small businesses. Two, a requirement that state agencies perform an economic impact analysis before they regulate. Three, a requirement that state agencies consider less burdensome alternatives that still meet regulatory goals. Four, judicial review so that the law has teeth. and 5, a provision that forces state government to periodically review all of its regulations. Likewise, there should be few, if any, exceptions from the law. Even the best regulatory flexibility initiative has little value if the majority of state agencies are exempted from it. We are pleased that many states around the country are recognizing the importance of regulatory flexibility laws by looking at them if they don't have them and building on them if they do. Oklahoma and Hawaii just recently enacted this legislation, and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico has had remarkable success on regulatory flexibility authority. Many states are considering adoption of RFA, including Rhode Island, New York, North Dakota, North Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Texas, to name a few. These examples show that successful legislation is the important first step in bringing needed regulatory relief to small business. The process, however, doesn't stop there. There remains a need for committed executive leadership, for trained and educated state agencies so they will know what their responsibilities are and how to accomplish them, and for continued involvement of the small business community to provide feedback on what still needs to be done. There's no question that small business is the backbone of the economy here in Oregon, just as it is throughout the country. Sometimes, because small business is small, it is easy to overlook their total importance to the economy, and it's very easy to overlook the negative impact of regulatory activities on them. The intent of this legislation is to compel regulatory agencies to consider small businesses in the process by which regulations are developed, and particularly consider the disproportionate impact that those regulations might have. This legislation is needed. The Office of Advocacy commends you for bringing this forward, and we urge its support. Thank you for this opportunity to appear before your committee, and I would be privileged to attempt to answer any of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Norm. A couple of things. You said the $21 billion that was saved, was that over 1 year?
Or yes, that was over 1 year.
1 year?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Greer.
Good morning.
Good morning, Representative.
How would this bill affect the Endangered Species Act?
You want to go to that as far as the...
Chair Close and Representative Girard, if you don't mind deferring your question, what I'll do is I'll do a walkthrough analysis of the bill, and then maybe that'll address your question. If not, then I'll specifically address that.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Representative Shoffler.
Maybe Mr. Wilson think it could also... I want to help small business. I'm a small business owner. My wife's a small business owner. I know that regulation can be maddening because sometimes there seems no logic to it at all. But my concern with this, and maybe you can address this in your walkthrough analysis, reading this, it could, I mean, just, and maybe you can answer my concerns, upon judicial review, a court should declare rule invalid if agencies fail to comply. Well, that is pretty broad, because there's a lot of these things.
I'm sorry, Representative Shoffler, can you just...
Oh, forgive me, it's Section 4, Number 2, and then I'm jumping up to the Number 1, A through D, all of these requirements that are going to be necessary to comply. That's a pretty broad task. That's my concern about this. And things, I wasn't even thinking of something as big as the Endangered Species Act, but if this would make that null and void because of the inability to carry, you see my concern.
Chair Close and Representative Shoffler, I think that I will address that in the course of my testimony, so I think I'll be able to do that.
Okay, Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Norman, JL, the two provisions of law, two of the three provisions of law that are deleted by this bill is essentially kind of drove to the same point, that is 183.54, reduction of economic impact on small businesses, and 183.545, review of rules to minimize economic effect on businesses. could perhaps either one of you review why these provisions, which sound like they call for thorough review of the rules to minimize the impact on small businesses, haven't been working? What is the reason that these provisions have failed to do the job?
Thank you. I'll address this right now, Madam Chair, Representative Merkley. 183.540, which alludes to an economic impact statement, which I might add I've never seen in my life, which is supposed to accompany a rule. I've never seen one personally, Representative Merkley, so I'm not sure that part of the statute is being adhered to at all, because there's just a rough allusion to an economic impact statement, which I've never seen accompany a rule. Second, you highlight an issue where a lot of this doesn't deviate from what's already in place, and you refer to 540, and what 540 goes on to say is there somewhat of a flexibility analysis that has to accompany a regulation. What's in this bill and what's in 540 roughly match, so it doesn't deviate a whole lot. 545, I will say this bill will need an amendment, because 545 calls for periodic review of rules and lists a bunch of stipulations, things that have to be addressed with regard to should that rule continue to be put in force or should it be repealed because it is duplicative, no longer applicable, all that kind of thing. That was accidentally deleted in this measure, and that is not something that I intended to be deleted. It calls for a 3-year rule review, and that's been a source of some discussion in this building, because even at 3 years, I don't even think that agencies are able to do a good job of thorough rule review in 3 years. I would personally advocate putting that back in the bill, but loosening the time frame to something like 5. Okay. But like I said, Chair Close, Representative Merkley, I'll touch on some of this when I go through the bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and do that?
Okay. House Bill 2967, as Mr. Proctor alluded to, is the Regulatory Flexibility Act that is at the request of NFIB, the Small Business Administration, and the Governor's Council on Small Business. Going through the sections that really represent the meat of the bill, Section 2, something that Oregon does not have defined in statute is what is a small business and how can you define it in terms of number of employees and amount of gross sales. Section 2 puts that in statute for the first time. A small business, for purposes of 2967, is a business that employs fewer than 500 full-time employees or has gross annual sales of less than $6 million. That is currently the federal definition of small business, and I can tell you, as I'm sure subsequent testimony will tell you, 500 employees seems awfully big for small business. And, in fact, it was brought to my attention by the Economic Community Development Department that 500 employees would cover every Oregon company except for about 200. So my thought is, do you expand the definition to include all businesses in this bill, or do you ratchet down the definition to include small business? I would prefer to ratchet down the definition to include small business and narrow the employee threshold to 250, 200, 100, whatever seems to grab the committee. But that is the importance of Section 2, is that it defines small business in statute for the first time, and that we, and for the purposes of who the Regulatory Flexibility Act applies to. So that's why Section 2 is important. Section 3 is it's kind of window dressing. You're talking about a preamble that tells you why regulatory reform is important, not the least of which is that small businesses do, in fact, bear disproportionate costs when it comes to regulatory compliance. And as Mr. Proctor alluded to, it's $7,000 per employee for small business, which is 60% higher than companies that have a much higher number of employees. Section 4 expands on what it is an agency should do in preparing a rule. And Section 4 is substantially new to the best of my knowledge, because it asks when an agency puts together a rule that it estimates the number of small businesses that will be subject to the rule, that it has some tabs on the projected reporting, record keeping, and other administrative costs that are required for compliance with the rule, a statement of probable effect on small business and whether this rule would adversely affect small business and in what capacity, and a description of any less intrusive or less costly alternative method. Now, this spells out that regulatory economic impact model that is alluded to in 183.540, but is not expanded upon. This expands on what it means to have an economic impact rule, an economic impact statement that accompanies a rule. And the reason why this is important from my perspective is that it will give the small business community some peace of mind that agencies going into the rulemaking process do have an idea of what they're doing. And at least they proceed forward with a working knowledge of how this impacts the private sector, which is really all that I can ask. And I think that one of the greatest fears of the private sector is that agencies kind of fly blind, not knowing fully how a rule will impact the private sector and in particular a small business. And this is to ensure that there is, in fact, full knowledge of what a rule will do prior to implementing it or going forward in the process of promulgating it. Now, the judicial review component that Representative Schaffler alluded to, a couple of points. First, judicial review is already in the Administrative Procedures Act. That is, somebody can challenge a rule and ask for judicial review of it currently. And so it would apply probably to this section of law, regardless of whether it was in this bill or not. I feel very strongly about having it accompany this effect on small business part of the APA. One of the things that was brought to me by the DCBS is this judicial review is a little more stringent than what's currently in statute. And I'm not married to this language. If it needs to be exactly the same as what other judicial review components in the APA say, that's fine with me. Because right now judicial review says that an agency has to substantially comply, which means a court won't overturn a measure without first giving an agency the ability to go back and correct the problem. Okay, it doesn't throw the whole thing out wholesale. And so if that language is needed to provide clarity or to provide consistency on what judicial review means, then I'm fine with that. That's okay. I want judicial review to apply, but I don't want it to be so radical that an agency can't deal with it. I want them to be able to deal with it just as they're able to deal with judicial review as it exists right now. So I want to make that clear. Section 5 says that once this analysis is complete, this economic impact analysis on the regulation and how it's going to impact small business, once it's completed and you find out that it does have an adverse impact on small business, then it asks the agency to go through a number of steps, which I might add are already in statute. So this part of the law is not substantially different from what already exists in 183.540, and that is a flexibility analysis. So once you have the economic impact statement in place and you determine that there will be an impact on small business that is adverse, here's the process that Section 5 stipulates. You see if you can't impose less stringent compliance and reporting requirements. See if you can't impose less stringent schedules or deadlines for compliance or reporting requirements. See if you can't consolidate or simplify reporting requirements for small business. See if you can establish performance standards as opposed to design or operational standards. And see if it's not a rule that you can't exempt small business from altogether. That's all this says. And like I said, this is not substantially different than what's already in statute in 183.540. Now, part of this section, again, is the judicial review, and I want to make very clear, I don't mean for this judicial review to be more stringent than what's already in place. If this needs to be amended to accommodate the type of judicial review that's already in place with the Administrative Procedures Act, that's just fine.
GL, can you tell us what the major difference would be between what this bill would, the judicial review in this bill, and what is currently in practice?
Thank you, Chair Close. For the best of my knowledge, and Mr. Patrick Allen might be able to expand on this, to the best of my knowledge, judicial review as it exists in the Administrative Procedures Act allows an agency to go back and fix a problem before a court tosses the measure, tosses the rule, or whatever. I could see where under this measure the courts allow just to yank the thing without allowing an agency to go back and fix the issue or address the problem. And so I think that that recourse ought to be available. That is, the agency ought to have the latitude to be able to fix the problem before a court steps in. And so that's the consistency that if it needs to be added, is fine. And finally, I also want to make clear a kind of a boo-boo, and that is 183.545 says that an agency would do a rule review every 3 years. That part was deleted, and I think that was a communication problem between me and the drafter. I want to make it very clear that I agree with rule review. I don't think a 3-year time period allows for the type of rule review that you want. In other words, I'm not convinced that rule review is very thorough as is, and it's probably because if you look at the multitude of rules, 3 years to review every one it blows my mind, quite honestly. So, you know, I don't mind. I would like the rule review to be reinstated, but I think loosening the timelines would actually be to greater effect on small business, because you have a broader timeline in which to do a better analysis. And I think a better analysis is more important than doing something haphazard in a smaller amount of time. So that is House Bill 2967 in a nutshell.
Could I just interject here, committee? You may notice this is one of the bills that we sponsored. However, it came so late in the process, we came up against the bill drop deadline, and we didn't have time to be able to make changes, so we had to drop it as is, which happened with many, many, many bills this session. So that's why we are having the hearing, no work session, and we're trying to work through this and make sure the bugs are out of it.
Thank you.
Representative Kitts.
JL, thank you for acknowledging your boo-boo. I appreciate your talking to the layman in lay terms. Just wanted to comment on the bill. I think it's a great bill, and I think that we as a committee and we as a legislature are definitely at a crossroads here. The voters have said that they want the services provided by the state at the same level that they're being provided. They've also said they don't want their taxes raised to pay for it. There's one way to accomplish both those things, and that's job creation. So I applaud you for coming forward with something that appears to do exactly what the voters want. Thank you.
You're welcome. May I?
No, you may not.
Use the question chair close to address something that I forgot in this bill.
Go ahead.
And that is, I want to make it very clear on a point in Section 5, Sub 1. This is not meant to subvert regulatory goals. In fact, Section 5, Sub 1 states very clearly that this is meant to find alternatives to rule compliance for small business without sacrificing public health, public safety, environmental protection, and economic welfare. So I want to make it very clear, the underlying intent is not to compromise regulatory goals. Now, in subsection 3 of Section 5, and I forgot to mention this, because it opens up another scope of issues. This bill asks that the Economic and Community Development Department be consulted on doing this regulatory flexibility analysis. That is, the economic impact statement comes out, says this will have some adverse bearing on small business. Okay, now it's time for the regulatory flexibility analysis. The bill asks that the Economic Community Development Department be consulted to weigh in on this flexibility analysis. Now, from my point of view, the department has been under a little bit of fire. I think that's obvious. But one of the important things is it gives the department a certain amount of credibility with the small business community if they're able to assist in doing something that substantially helps small business, and that is provide alternative methods by which to abide by rules and regulation, which I think should be a very important function for the Economic Community Development Department, and I hope it's something they would embrace, but I can't speak for them. But I want you to know it is something they are to be consulted under this bill. to help in the flexibility analysis, to provide their recommendation. And I think it's a very important function of that department because, again, I think that in terms of how the small business relates to the ECDD, it's a very important function for them to undertake and will help establish some credibility for that agency in the private sector, which I'm not sure exists now. And so that's a tie-in I wanted to make, and I want to build those strong relationships between the agency and the private sector. So that is in this bill. I think when you talk about that, you know, I think it's a very appropriate thing for perhaps an Office of Small Business to do, you know, if I can make that plug. But, you know, there should be some function within that department to be able to help small business abide by rules or help in the shaping of rules so that small businesses can comply with them. Now I've said everything that needs to be said on it.
Representative Gallegos, and then Merkley, and then Rosenbaum.
Correct.
Thank you for bringing up that piece in Section 5-3, because we're in the Trade and Economic Development Committee, we're hearing a lot of testimony from our good friends in OECDD, and my question had to do with why you were going to... Is that currently their role?
Thank you. Chair Close, Representative Gallegos. Not, to the best of my knowledge, no. What I am suggesting, though, is it should be. If for nothing else, to establish some credibility between the agency and the private sector. I'm not here to cast aspersions on the agency. I personally have warm feelings for some of the things they do, but I think there needs to be a tie-in between that agency and an everyday Main Street small business. And this is what I see as kind of that tie-in.
Madam Chair, not follow up, but is Mike Burton or the folks from OECDD going to testify today?
We don't have them on the list.
Because my follow-up question would really have to be with, are we creating, I mean, clearly there's still a lot of influx work being done with OECDD and the different bills that are out there, and what does this impact do to that agency? Are we shifting a burden somewhere, creating where it doesn't exist right now? And I don't know whether JL can answer that. Because clearly that might be something I'd want to address to Mike Burton if they were to come up later.
Okay, we will intend to do so.
Thank you. But Chair Close and Representative Gallegos, I think you can say unquestionably this is imposing somewhat of a workload that does not exist currently at the agency level. I think that's quite clear. What I'm suggesting is, you know, does the issue of regulation warrant some sea change in how business is conducted? And obviously, I think the issue is important enough. And you know, when it comes election time, everybody seems to, you know, say how important regulations are. But you know, all we end up getting out of it's a task force or some committee to study the possibility of another committee. And I mean, this is something concrete. And, you know, it does require some heavy lifting and like I say, a sea change in how you view an agency's role in helping, you know, comply with rules and regulations. So I'm not in any way suggesting that this just happens like that and nobody changes how they do anything. I think, you know, obviously some extra workload is required under this measure.
Okay, and Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In that sense, JL, do you have a fiscal impact statement on this so we know how much we're going to spend to fulfill this?
Thank you. Chair Close and Representative Merkley, I too am anxiously awaiting the fiscal impact.
Patrick can address that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Merkley, I was on the phone with Cindy Jones in the Legislative Fiscal Office this morning, and she had indicated that she received a fax late Friday that indicated that there may be a fiscal impact to the bill. Fiscal was not anticipating that there would be an impact, but upon further review and additional information that came in, there may be one, and they're working on one right now, and they're hoping that it's possible that they'll have it to us by the end of the meeting, but they weren't able to guarantee that they would.
Okay, if I can follow
on.
Under Section 4D, line 20, page 2, it says a description of any less intrusive or less costly alternative methods. I would just kind of
ask you to think about that, and when we talk about this bill next time, my concern there is that when one says any less intrusive or less costly alternatives, I think probably a group of three or four people could come up with a few hundred ideas in an hour or so on any given regulation, which if in fact we're saying to an agency that they have to anticipate any idea that would be thought of and address it, that's a virtually impossible task, which means upon judicial review you could throw out any rule. And so that's just a concern about kind of a reasonable process.
Chair Close and Representative Merkley, actually I view that Section 4 sub D or 1D is kind of duplicative with the regulatory flexibility analysis itself. So as I read it, it wouldn't give me a tremendous amount of heartburn if that were taken out, because it seems to me that that is in fact the analysis. And so, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it was in the model bill, but it seems to me that, that what's in that sub D there seems to be seems to allude to me the analysis itself. So if you know, we can talk about whether 1D needs to be there, and you know, perhaps it doesn't. So I'm open to that.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jail, I guess one potential concern is that we're imposing a lot of work at a time when we don't have the money to fund what government is currently doing. And in that vein, I wanted to ask you, are there some kinds of rulemaking that wouldn't necessarily have to entail this process? And I'm thinking of, you know, whole state agencies like the Department of Education that are really implementing federal rules that are changing all the time, or, you know, DHS with TANF reauthorization. And a lot of these rules are just written because federal requirements imposed on us as a state have changed and we don't have any flexibility about that. So are there, I mean, do you mean this to apply to every agency and every rule change, no matter how technical or how mirroring of the federal requirements they are?
Thank you, Chair Close and Representative Rosenbaum. There are certainly a wide variety of specifics that don't fit neatly into a model bill, and you've highlighted perfectly some that, that probably apply. And if it would mean, if it would mean an exemption for something like the Department of Education on something where I'm satisfied that has little to no bearing on small business, then yeah, that needs to be put in there. I don't know if you can flesh out every single one at first blush, but your concern is, you know, your point is well taken, and I understand that is a legitimate issue.
And a follow-up, Madam Chair?
And just a comment. You can't put in a federal rule override. That's commonly done by LC.
Go ahead. I wanted to ask you, too, about the language that's, I guess, in a couple of places in the bill that talks about the agency making a determination if the rule would adversely impact small business. And that seems like it's largely a pretty subjective standard as to what an adverse impact on small business is. Can you tell us, I guess, what your intent is by that language, or how the agency is supposed to evaluate that? Do you mean an economic impact? And
Chair Close and Representative Rosenbaum, that part to me is very important, because what you're basically talking about is an agency acknowledging that what it's doing may have an adverse impact on small business, which is really what all I'm asking. And that is some acknowledgement that, yes, we're doing something, we're not flying blind, and we have some working knowledge of how this will impact the private sector. I mean, bring it to a point where there's an acknowledgement, that to me is a huge step. Now, you're talking about compliance costs. What's the administrative cost of paperwork? How does it deviate from what I'm supposed to do at a federal level? In other words, you know, Oregon, we have two different forms to fill out for you know, employment taxes, for instance. You got one federal, one state, and they're different. Why are they different? And that's one example. What, you know, you're talking about compliance costs, deadlines that have to be met, what's it cost administratively, in terms of, and also with a capital outlay. So I see a number of instances in which you could say, yeah, it has an adverse impact. Because this rule is put into place, you're going to have to spend X amount of dollars and X amount of time more than you would have otherwise. And, you know, whether an agency goes on to promulgate that rule in light of that analysis, you know, that's one thing. That's fine. But an acknowledgement of that is, to me, tremendous.
Representative Garrard.
This is kind of a follow-up on Representative Rosenbaum, and I think you partially answered my question, JL, but I like the bill for its intent, but I'm suspect of the bill actually ever accomplishing anything for small business or big business. Based on my experience with agencies, and I can just see ODOT sitting there having to do an economic impact before they do something, as though it would have any effect on them whatsoever, or LCDC or DEQ or anybody else. I guess I have a real concern, and you partially answered it, but what happens when the adverse impact is determined? The answer to that is probably nothing.
Well, I think that thank you, Chair Close and Representative Garrard. I think that highlights the importance of why the judicial review component is important in this measure, and that is you've got to bring them to a point where there is an acknowledgement and an analysis of the measure, and then you can debate. Then you can it puts the measure out there, the rule out there, so you can debate it on a cost benefit scale. My only question is, if it works on the federal level to the tune of $21 billion a year, to me, it gives me some peace of mind that it'll work on the state level to some smaller scale. And so I guess I take some peace in that. I guess what it really requires is somebody kind of like Mr. Proctor, somebody on the inside who's willing to be an advocate for small employers in the rulemaking process, much the same way as advocacy is. And I'm suggesting that that role probably should reside in ECDD. And so, yeah, dude, I mean, I know where you're coming from, but Mike, I guess where I'm at is that this model has proven effective at the federal level. So why don't we get the model in place in Oregon and then see what needs to happen along the way to give it its intended effect.
Representative Shoffler.
I agree with the intent of this too. I'm not really, this language I'm not happy with, or I'm very concerned about a lot of it, and I'm glad to hear you're going to work on it. But, you know, I don't want to create more work for our government than we already got, because we haven't even got the money to pay for what we're doing, as you probably know better than me. But I will agree with the maddening regulation that is imposed on small business. I have to buy a sign. Cost me $3, or I can make my own. Every time I do some concrete for erosion control. Now, I'm a firm believer and advocate of erosion control, but they don't call my work flat work for no reason. Almost all my work's on flat ground. Yet I have to put this sign up, and anybody driving by can call the city anytime they want and complain, even if there's, and then someone has to follow up on it. Now, that just drives me crazy. I don't want to buy that sign. I don't want to have to post it, and I don't want to create more job work for a government agency. But there's a reason why I do have to do all that. That I have my own frustrations with all the things that are put on me. And I'm just this one-guy operation. My wife has to go through this long list of things, spend all this time dealing with all these regulations instead of fixing people's teeth, which she's trained and educated to do. I mean, we're talking hundreds of hours a year she has to comply, just to comply. And I don't think people have really went in and studied the amount of time she puts in her business. She has to mark every little chemical in her closet and have MSDS sheets on all that stuff, even though she only has 3 employees. It is just incredible. And every year, it gets greater and greater and greater and greater. And I don't think it's really doing what it was intended to do, which is to protect workers, protect the environment, protect people. It's just created a monster. And I agree with the intent. How you do this and have language that's going to satisfy me and all these nice folks and everybody and do what you intend, I don't even know if you can do it. But I wish you luck. I do agree with the intent, but I'm not, this is pretty broad, and I'm kind of concerned about some things in here. Sorry, it took so long.
No, thank you, Chair Close and Representative Schaffler. It's, from my point of view, let's get the information out there and debate whether it's a good idea to make you put a sign out there, even if you don't have to. And that is the intent. Now, from my point of view, and this is where, you know, I may disagree with you. Actually, more accurately, you may disagree with me. And that is, I don't think an agency, you know, in their ability to treat a business fairly in the regulatory process, should be contingent on how much money they've got. To me, it should be an embedded function of an agency, and if it hasn't been to this point, well, let's make it one. And to me, it's not one of those things where, well, we don't have the money to do it, but when we're flush with cash, we'll be happy to give you a shake. I mean, to me, that creates an acrimony that already exists between the private and public sectors that I'm trying to get at with this measure to some degree.
I appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much. I want to thank NFIB and the U.S. Small Business Administration and the Governor's Council on Small Business for bringing this bill. You know, what occurs to me, JL, is that we don't pass any legislation in this building and put it into statute unless there's a fiscal statement that we have to have before we vote. And agencies are providing those economic statements on every single bill that has a fiscal. So they're already doing it. They have people that make these statements for the legislature. So it seems to me this is just an extension of what they're currently doing, and we're just applying it to rules as well as legislation. So I appreciate what you've done, and we will look forward to working with you on this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to call Eric Blackledge, Governor's Small Business Council.
Chair Close, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Blackledge, and I'm representing today the Governor's Small Business Council. And I apologize for my voice, but I, too, am having horrible allergy trouble today.
Sorry.
In my background testimony to the committee in January, I pointed out the importance of small business to the Oregon economy. There were 97% of Oregon businesses that have employees are small businesses, and including the self-employed, they account for almost 70% of all Oregon jobs. Their ability to compete and grow will be the key to Oregon's recovery from the current recession. This bill implements a recommendation of the Small Business Council's 2002 report, which I gave you in January, to improve public policies and regulations so small businesses do not incur a disproportionate share of regulatory burden. Research that was indicated by Mr. Proctor earlier has indicated that small businesses incur a 60% greater regulatory burden based on federal regulations, and I think because of the nature of state regulations, which are often more involved with small business issues, many of the state regulations probably provide even more of a burden on small businesses, and again, a very disproportionate burden to those very small businesses, those under 10 or 15 individuals. Recognizing the impact of regulatory costs and delays on Oregon's economy and job growth, the last legislature directed the Department of Administrative Services to evaluate ways to improve the state's regulatory process. Their findings also suggest a need for, and I quote, added flexibility for users to meet regulatory standards and for greater regulatory clarity and better coordination of overlapping regulations. This bill provides a first step in correcting those problems. First of all, let me agree with prior testimony that there are a number of things that do need to be changed in the bill. I do agree that ORS 183-545 should not be deleted. That's the one that provides for review, and I think it would be very reasonable to perhaps amend that section to make that review on a 5-year cycle rather than a 3-year cycle. I think also that reducing the definition of small businesses from the federal definition of 500 to perhaps 200, which has generally been used by the state of Oregon to define small businesses, would perhaps also be a significant change. The requirements otherwise for considering regulatory flexibility for small businesses detailed in House Bill 2997 are not significantly greater than the current legal requirements for agencies contained in ORS Chapter 183, except in two key areas, and those areas have to some extent already raised some questions. ORS 183-540 now requires that when the economic effect analysis shows the rule has significant adverse effect upon small business and to the extent consistent with the public health and safety purposes of the rule, the agency shall reduce the economic impact of the rule on small business. It then goes on to list essentially the same methods for doing so as are contained in this bill. Unfortunately, if you ask any state agency representative who comes before you whether state agencies regularly meet this requirement, I think they will tell you, as they have told me, that they do not. The current statute provides only, unfortunately, an objective, but not a process for achieving it. It doesn't require an impact analysis statement. It simply requires an effect analysis, which could be as much as saying, well, I don't think this is going to have much impact on small business, but let's move on. And that's one of the problems with the current regulations. The current statute also provides an objective, but not that process. This bill provides a much more specific process for impact analysis based on the national model developed by USSBA, which has been tested at the federal level, and also includes an important requirement for public access to the agency's analysis. If that analysis is not put into the form of an impact statement, something that's on paper that can be reviewed not only by other state agencies, but also by outside parties, it's hard to determine whether the agency has really gone through that process in an effective manner or not. The bill also adds another important element by having the agency's flexibility analysis reviewed by the Department of Economic and Community Development. OECDD could then provide input to the agency on their analysis of economic impact, as well as help them to better coordinate their rulemaking with other state and local agencies and make it easier for businesses to comply with the many diverse regulations that affect them. This has been an initiative that the governor has established also to try and make certain that all of the overlapping regulations that affect business are clarified as much as possible. In fact, a related bill, House Bill 2969, authorizes OECDD to provide this coordinating and advocacy function and establishes an Office of Small Business and an advisory committee within the department to assist other agencies in effectively conducting their regulatory analysis. The state is now spending a great deal of money through the Department of Economic and Community Development to encourage business development in the state of Oregon to try and help us recover from this current recession. But in effect, having too many regulations, and particularly unneeded regulations, which hinder the ability of small business to compete, may be offsetting the expenditure the state's already making through that department. So it is logical to let that department review the regulatory impacts of other agencies so that they can help those agencies decide on regulations that will be less detrimental to small business. Some state agency representatives may tell you that they are concerned about the more detailed requirements of the model bill and are concerned that it may increase their workload at a time when their budgets have been cut because of the revenue shortfall. And this has been raised in a couple of questions so far. But I don't think that this should really be a significant concern. The reason the state's revenue has declined and agency budgets have had to be cut is because Oregon's businesses, most of them are small businesses, have already had significant reductions in their own earnings, if they had any earnings at all this past year. And most of them have already made reductions in their staffs and their budgets too. Regulatory compliance continues to be one of the major cost factors in business survival, and if the regulatory process is inefficient and exceeds the reasonable needs for the type and size of the business, it results in non-productive costs. These non-productive costs occur not only for the business, and there's been some mention of the amount the federal government has been able to save by their regulatory process, but also for the agency itself, because whenever there is a rule that is unproductive, the agency must also have staff and personnel in place to administer the reports that come in for that unproductive rule, and also enforcement personnel to enforce that unproductive rule. So there is a significant public cost involved in not finding the most efficient form of regulation for small business. And it's important to remember, too, that while a regulatory flexibility analysis occurs only once and requires only a short slice of staff time, a lack of reasonable flexibility results in unnecessary public and private costs that go on year after year because an unneeded regulation remains in place. Since the basic requirements for small business regulatory flexibility already exist in state law, even if they're not regularly complied with, it's also hard to accept the excuse that agencies can't do something they should be doing just because of limited staffs and budgets. How would those same agencies react if the businesses they regulated told them, I'm sorry, but because of our reduced budgets and staffs this year, our business just won't be able to comply with your regulations this year? My feeling is that probably the agency would not find that to be an adequate excuse. The bill is an effective enhancement to Oregon's regulatory statutes with the amendments that I've suggested and should lead to more effective, efficient regulatory processes which will reduce costs both for small businesses and also for the agencies which implement them. Because of the revenue shortfall, this legislature probably can't do a lot to stimulate small business growth with expensive new assistance programs or overall tax reductions. But by passing this bill to improve the regulatory flexibility process and help agencies develop more efficient regulatory programs, you can help improve the climate for small business growth without adding significant state expense. Let me address a couple of the issues that have also been raised in earlier testimony. One, in regard to the Office of Small Business, as I mentioned, another bill is in process that will be heard later by this committee. They would establish that function within the Economic and Community Development Department and give it somewhat of the same kinds of, not responsibilities, but at least options to provide the same kinds of services that USSBA's Office of Advocacy does. And that is a very important element in the success of the Federal Regulatory Flexibility Program. Secondly, the issue of judicial review was raised in ORS 183-538, which deals with judicial review of the state's requirement for an impact analysis for rules and regulations which would affect housing cost. There is a judicial review process there for housing cost impact statements. That same review process might apply to small business impact statements, and it requires that the courts can review whether or not the analysis was done, although it does not allow the court to actually determine whether or not the analysis was adequate. And I think as a starting point, that would be a reasonable form of judicial review for a small business impact statement also, particularly if that statement was actually in written form so that it was available for review by other people. I think those two things combined would accomplish the purpose. And lastly, an issue was raised about what about all those regulations that just clearly don't have any impact on small business. And I would suggest that an exception, that an amendment might be made to Section 4, Item 1, which says that before adopting any rule, an agency shall prepare, to change that instead to read, before adopting any rule which would have a regulatory impact on small businesses, an agency shall prepare a small business regulatory impact. So I think clearly the legislation could be amended to exclude any kind of regulatory environment which does not have significant impact on small business. Mm-hmm. And it would certainly be logical from a cost-saving standpoint. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Eric. That's excellent testimony. I agree with you. I think you have to spend something to get something, and that's what we're trying to do here. I also want you to know I will intend to schedule House Bill 2969 for Wednesday. We do have a full day Wednesday, but I think because that's a companion to this bill, we need to have a hearing on that while our minds are fresh on that. So, questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Call Patrick Allen, Office of Regulatory Streamlining. And I guess, Mike Burton, why don't you come up with him? Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Close, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Allen and I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining located in the Department of Consumer and Business Services. My office was created by Governor Kulongoski's executive order on regulatory streamlining. In that order, the governor recognized the need for state government to do a much better job of minimizing the impact of our rules and regulations on business while still providing the protection Oregonians expect for consumers, workers, and the environment. In particular, the Office of Regulatory Streamlining is responsible for helping state agencies identify opportunities to improve and streamline regulatory processes, reduce regulatory burdens, share best practices, coordinate improvement of processes that cross agency lines, investigate possible changes to administrative procedure laws, and assist with the development and implementation of customer service surveys and improvement plans. Chair Close, House Bill 2967 before you today is one of several bills that have been introduced this session to provide legislative direction for this regulatory streamlining and simplification effort. I really believe that it's very fair to say that there is broad agreement with the basic intent of House Bill 2967 to assure that the impact of new and revised rules and regulations on small business is adequately understood, that practical alternatives have been considered, and that the impact on small businesses is the minimum necessary to carry out the regulatory purpose being implemented. In fact, there's so much agreement around this issue that many of the concepts in House Bill 2967 are already contained in Oregon law, sometimes going back over 20 years. For example, current ORS 183-335 requires in part that an economic impact statement for proposed rules include an assessment of the cost of compliance for small business. ORS 183-540 requires reduction of the economic impact of a rule on small business by such means as reduced or simplified reporting, objective criteria standards, or even waiver of any or all of the requirements of the rule on small business. ORS 183-545 and 550 require a periodic review of existing rules to ensure the minimization of their impact on business. To be sure, these existing statutes should be considered for improvement, and the intent of House Bill 2967 gets at some of the right areas. Currently, agencies are given little guidance in terms of how to assess the business impact of proposed rules. Small business and other interests are invited to participate in the rulemaking process, but we've heard from the proponents of the bill that due to time and other constraints inherent in running a small business, the ability of individual small companies and employers to engage in this fashion is quite limited. As a result, the bill's proponents argue justifiably that agencies do not frequently get the benefit of input from a small business perspective. That said, as drafted, House Bill 2967, as you've already heard, we believe is seriously flawed. Specifically, the provisions of Section 4 specifying the content of the economic impact assessment required in ORS 183-335 provide good examples of ways agencies can identify impacts on small business, but do so in a mandatory and prescriptive language that will result in many cases in agencies delaying the implementation of necessary rules while they conduct expensive research or analysis trying to identify and analyze what could potentially be an unlimited set of alternatives. Section 5 of the bill provides for a mandatory alternatives analysis and judicial review process that puts our rulemaking process on a par with essentially an environmental impact analysis, sort of a process that you find in federal law and in the laws of some other states. California is an example. We've consistently heard from business that this process is fraught with too many opportunities for lawsuits, endless analysis, and repetitive input, making decisions harder, not easier, to reach. And you've heard several comments about the issue of substantial compliance versus the strict compliance that's called for in Section 5. Chair Close, members of the committee, all that said, I would reiterate that the intent of the bill is to address areas where statutory improvement should be considered. We've met with the sponsors of the bill, and I'm confident there's room to work out language that accomplishes the intent without opening the door so widely to endless analysis and potential for lawsuits. I mentioned earlier that a number of bills have been introduced to deal with regulatory streamlining. We're working with a number of those bills and sponsors to try to arrive at language that meets as many different objectives as possible. Most importantly, we're trying to narrow the field down to one bill so as to avoid having four or five separate legislative efforts on regulatory streamlining all ongoing at the same time. We'd like to work with the sponsors of this bill to see if we can find satisfactory language that can be inserted into an appropriate bill. As the range of streamlining issues goes well beyond just small business and the relating clause of this bill is fairly narrow, I believe the best course is to work to insert small business issues into a broader bill, and we'd like to work with the sponsors toward that end. One word outside the prepared testimony that I've got having to do with the role of the Economic and Community Development Department, and Mike and Ron can speak to this in more detail, but I think the issue that you'll have before you is that as a legislature and over time, you've given that department a pretty specific and detailed list of charges of things that they're supposed to deal with and think about and areas that they're supposed to act. If you're going to charge them with an expansion of that scope, you're going to have to at some point balance, is there some other part of the scope that goes away, or do they get added resources to be able to deal with that expanded scope? And again, they can probably speak in more detail to that. At this point, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Patrick. I have a couple questions. You know, it's interesting that now that the timber industry has been very much destroyed by excessive lawsuits, that now we don't want to give small business that same opportunity. Interesting contrast. You are a new agency. I want to ask you the teeth question.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you've had any judicial action yet and if it's been effective. Part of the problem that's been voiced to me by businesses that have not come into the state is that Oregon is open for business on our terms, and that's a direct quote from somebody who did not locate here. And so this idea of advocacy for small business has not been a part of our state process, according to those people. And so this bill is trying to set up an advocacy for small business, which I believe we need. So I would like you to address the judicial question, the teeth question, and the advocacy question.
Sure. And recognizing that as of this morning, I've been doing this for all of a week, so my familiarity with regulatory processes is still pretty thin. I think the issue of teeth has as much to do with what guidance you provide agencies for what needs to be considered, and how they're held to that guidance as it does the level of judicial review. I think the concern that you heard JL and others articulate is if you, as this bill does, hold them to strict compliance, what you end up doing is saying, well, you're going to have to consider a set of alternatives, and if you miss one, or if you somehow don't adequately count the number of businesses that were impacted or whatever else, the whole rule is out out the window. The current statute for judicial review provides for substantial compliance and allows for an agency to fix an error or to in some other way identify that it has substantially complied with the rule. And I think that's an important point that needs to be preserved. I think the issue gets into the list of factors that need to be considered. It's in section four of the existing bill. Provides great guidance to agencies about what they need to consider. And you'll hear agencies say, if you ask them, maybe not quite what was asserted earlier, that they aren't doing it. I think they'll say that they are doing an economic impact analysis, but they often don't know. They don't have the perspective or the point of view or the kinds of knowledge to be able to adequately assess business impacts. This gives them good signposts, but if you put this kind of a definitive and exhaustive list in statute, it provides lots of opportunity for that strict judicial review that ends up, I think, causing problems down the road.
Okay, and to follow up, you know, the purpose of judicial review is to force compliance. If the policeman pulls you over at the stop sign because you didn't hesitate long enough, he doesn't give you the chance to substantially comply. He says, here's your ticket, you have to pay a fine, you have to go to court. And if he did just say to people, we want you to substantially comply, he probably wouldn't have a lot of compliance. So how do you
Chair Close, I guess I'd respond to say that in my experience interacting with law enforcement on the interstates, there are a couple of other things that do actually happen. They give you, there is such a thing as giving you a warning. There is such
never.
A thing.
I've never got one.
I actually have. A couple of times.
Not the gender.
No.
Evidently not.
Not the gender.
And you know, you coming from the South, me coming from the North, both know that there's a little bit of leeway in what that posted speed limit is. Call it substantial compliance with the 65-mile-an-hour posted limit. I think the issue is do you want to create a mechanism where an agency has to come and say, here's what we did and why? And I don't think anybody disagrees with that. And the issue is, do you want to go a step further and say, if at any point in here there's a place where someone can show that there was one more thing you should have considered or one more thing you should have done, that the right answer is to throw the whole rule out as opposed to sending the agency back to go fix that issue.
Okay. Other questions? All right. Mr. Burton, would you like to, since you have extensive background in agencies, would you like to address some of the comments that have been made about cost?
Chair Close, members of the committees, I'd be happy to make some comments. I want to point out first, I'll identify myself for the record. I'm Mike Burton, Assistant Director of the Economic and Community Development Department. I'm joined by Ron Fox, who's the Business and Industry Division Manager. And even though he didn't mention it, Mr. Allen, before he went to work at Consumer and Business Services, was the Small Business Programs Manager at the department, so has been working on this for some time. I'm surprised that he's so modest. But I think the committee's perspective kind of mirrors that of the department. Reading through the bill, listening to the issues, listening to the testimony before you today, created the same sorts of questions in my mind that I heard you put on the table. Listening to Mr. Wilson, or Mr. Proctor, rather, I was thinking of the regulatory issues the department gets involved with already, and most predominantly are, as Representative Girard mentioned, the Endangered Species Act, the OSHA, Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act. These are all federal laws. And while state agencies adopt rules to implement those federal laws, in many cases state agencies are the enforcers of those federal laws, there's not a lot of discretion from an agency's perspective about what shall or shall not happen because the law says you're going to do these things. So an amendment to the bill that would make sure that this law only affects small businesses kind of avoids the fact that there are laws that affect small businesses and the agencies enforcing those laws don't really have a lot of discretion in terms of where they go. I think as everyone has said so far, we think the premise behind the bill is good. I grew up in a small business. My dad was over for dinner last night and talking about something that went through the last session related to OSHA, and is wondering where we were, the Oregon Restaurant Association, on that particular bill. But there are unforeseen results. There are unforeseen consequences. never mind that, the law will have an impact on small businesses, large businesses. No matter where you set the standard, you're going to have an impact on a lot of businesses in Oregon. The big issue for the department, though, is that this is a piece of work. While we have a related role, I don't want you to believe that the department doesn't do anything in this area. We have a team of three people who assist businesses on regulatory compliance, walking through regulatory issues, and that's where our experience with the Endangered Species Act, Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act comes from. And that those people work for businesses small and large. We help them understand the process. We're currently not much involved in the process of rule writing by the regulatory agencies. And for us to go there, we would need to staff up for the effort. As you've suggested, as you've heard, we don't have a lot of people sitting around waiting for something to do. We have a full plate. This would be additional work. As a companion piece, the small business office does make sense. And if you chose to fund and staff an office of small business, it seems like this would be a very appropriate piece of work for people in that role. Right now, we don't have people dedicated to the regulations of other agencies, and it would be an additional piece of work with cost. I'd be happy to answer questions. Mr. Fox and Mr. Allen both would be happy to answer questions, I'm sure.
I guess we have no questions.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Burton, I think your conversation with Dad kind of raises a concern that I was trying to express previously, and that is, what is an adverse effect on small business? I mean, I'm sure you could probably find an employer somewhere who thinks that just about every rule that we have and the state has an adverse effect because they feel overregulated. So how do you think we can implement language objectively that seems to have such a subjective standard?
Chair Close, Representative Rosenbaum, I'm sure that my dad would fit the bill on most of those occasions in terms of regulation. I think you heard from the sponsors that their real interest is to have agencies become aware of and consider small business, actually business issues, business perspectives. They expressed, I heard them, and I don't want to speak for them, but I heard them say that the goal was really to get agencies thinking along those lines. You know, what's it mean to the flat work contractor to have to put up a sign related to erosion control? If that's the goal, I think either reinforcing the current laws, making it clear that in terms of budget notes with the regulatory agencies that there is expectations that they satisfy the intent of the law, making a statement that we mean this, we want this to be done. The state, through an executive order, has created an office focused on this sort of effort. I think getting agency people focused on the ball is a good move. Whether or not you need to have our department weighing in on every rule passed that impacts small businesses, it is a policy call that you need to make. And you need to make it in the context of deciding to fund it if you want to go there.
Madam Chair, please.
And Schaffler?
You know, actually, there's two sides to this. It isn't just how much it costs small business. It's how much a rule is going to cost government. Now, that sign that drives me crazy, I think it's a City of Portland law rule. I'm sure it is. I have to pay $3 or I can make my own, put the phone number on it. And I put it out there. Well, I was on the Planning Commission, the City Council. I'm well-versed and a supporter of and a practice erosion control. I'm not even the person they got to worry about. They need to worry about the big guy who's out there tearing up the hillside. I'm not attacking the big guy there. I'm just saying that's the kind of project we got to worry about. But my sign could create unnecessary work and an unnecessary burden on city government, because anybody can call that number. And it just drives me crazy. And I'm beating on this drum. I apologize, Madam Chair. But
we're enjoying it, Representative Schaffler.
It could create more work than it's worth. And so I'm not against Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act. In fact, I'm a supporter of that. And I'm a supporter of a lot of things OSHA does. And what was the fourth one you said? I can't remember. But
DEQ.
Yeah. All that. I'm a supporter of that, but I do, once again, I want to stress that I agree with the intent of this. I'm all for it, But how, it's like defining what one ought to do or what is good. I don't know. I wish you guys luck in figuring that out because I don't have the answer to it. Once again, thank you for your indulgence, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gallegos.
Well, you've answered all my questions that I came forward with the exception I still have a concern, and that is in Section 5, the, you know, actually the OECD part, and only because of the work that we're doing in the Trade and Economic Development Committee. And my, I don't really have a question, but it's more expressing a concern to the committee that this and the follow-up bill that we'll be seeing in a few days, which is House Bill 2969, that as we struggle to get our hands around what is the role of OECD, what are all the things we've asked them to do, and, you know, the whole scope of all this, and now in another committee, are we creating or adding to that? You know, as we've tried to figure out where all the tentacles are of OECD, now we see another one growing. And I just would urge us to be a little more cautious, especially since we don't and haven't seen all the bills that are coming in, which I think will affect OECD, and we might be doing this for naught or for just complicating our lives. It's a great concept, but when there's parallel work going on, there's a caution, a flag that's been brought up.
Thank you, Representative Gallegos. I don't think it hurts to have a multitude of counselors on this type of issue. And I'm wondering, this Office of Regulatory Streamlining, what department are you under then?
I'm part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Okay, so we have sort of competing agencies in here, correct? Or?
Well, no. I think from our perspective, the governor was pretty clear in, by executive order, establishing this function and charging the office, or charging agencies with streamlining regulations and providing this office to help move that effort along. So I don't think we perceive ourselves as competing. This
but
bill maybe introduces a new element to that.
He could have put it either place, correct?
And Chair Close, I think the concern I think you're expressing is this redundant. You know, there's one agency that's already doing this. Should we create another agency to do this? I think the sponsors of the bill intended, in recognition of the difficulty of small businesses actually coming to the table to speak up for themselves. Mr. Blackledge drove up from Corvallis. You know, it's a fairly major commitment of time. He's been really good about that in general, but for many small businesses, it's difficult. I think their intention is to have an interested third party whose job it is to do that, and they're saying that the department would be good for that. I'm saying that that's probably good as well, but it can be discharged at Consumer and Business Services.
I see.
Well.
Thank you for clarifying that. Thank you, panel. It's very helpful to us. Our last testifier is Terry Witt, Oregonians for Food and Shelter. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and as such represent about 11,000 farmers, foresters, and small business owners in the pesticide and fertilizer business, both application and sales. I'd just like to add, I think, an exclamation point to those who have come before me talking about the need for this type of, I'll call it, reform. It was kind of interesting when I heard one of the previous testifiers say that at least I believe I heard him say that we already have laws on the books that require state agencies to look at economic impact on businesses. I've been in Oregon for 17 years and I've yet to see that happen. Typically when we deal with fiscal impact, it's always fiscal impact to state and local governments, and kind of, pardon the expression, the hell with the small business or the hell with the business community. They don't seem to count when we look at the impact of regulation. I agree with, I think, most of the comments that JL made and previous testifiers that obviously some changes need to be made in the details of the law, including perhaps ratcheting down the size of a small business and some of the other details in terms of periodic review, and particularly, I think, somehow putting some sideboards on the concept that all alternatives have to be discussed by the agency. I think that is, I think Representative Merkley was correct. That's a kind of a never-ending Ferris wheel to try to get on or get off. But I would just like to make comment for the record, and I think it goes probably without saying, but sometimes it's something that's forgotten, and that is all farms and all forests or forest operations are small businesses for the most part. With the exception of some major corporations in the state, small woodlot owners and farmers are all small business people. And as such, typically catch the brunt of many of the regulations that we have, and obviously they then are translated into rule. Seldom does the regulatory machine or the statutory machine ever look at or consider adverse economic impact on the regulated community. It's always impact on the regulator rather than the regulatee. And I'd like to just give one quick example before, and then I'll be quiet. But we passed in 1999 a pesticide reporting bill, and I think that's a great example to use in terms of how we need to be looking at impact on the business community. We passed that law in 1999, and I helped write that bill, and I put wording in that bill that talked about the system being efficient, being economical, being practical. Now, when we passed the rules, we had some folks working on a pilot program to see what the impact of this measure would be on small businesses, and one small business in the city of Eugene, trying to comply with the draft rules, had to put an additional 1,200 hours, man hours, into the reporting requirement to comply with this bill. Now, granted, this individual runs a lawn and tree care service in Eugene. He has several trucks, and as such, does about 25 to 30,000 applications per year. That's a far different scenario than perhaps a small farmer that may do half a dozen to a dozen applications of pesticides a year. But nevertheless, this is one of the continuums that we have to look at when we pass a law. 1,200 additional person hours for one regulation or one rule. To me, that does not constitute efficient, economical, or practical when it comes to the application of a statute. So I think from my perspective, what we need to do, we obviously need to take into consideration the impact on small business. But when we get into the rulemaking process, somehow we need to require the agencies to take a practical look at the impact of this, to have some sort of standard or gauge. I think if anyone looked at a rule, a single rule that required an additional 1,200 person hours to comply with, I think anyone would agree that that's an unreasonable rule, that's not practical, that's not economical, that's not efficient. So I think that, from my perspective, kind of sums up where I hope this law will eventually take us, put some reason back into small business regulations or business regulations as a whole. I, too, have a son that has started a private business, and he's learning the hard way what that entails. It's not as easy as hanging out your shingle and saying, I am a computer website designer. There's a lot to comply with. And he's learning, like I say, he's learning the hard way. And right now he's getting very discouraged and will likely go back and try to find a job in industry because he says it's just not worth it. I don't think we can afford to establish that kind of a perception in Oregon, not only for those within the state that are looking at becoming an entrepreneur, but also those from outside the state that are looking at coming in to help create the jobs that we need to get this economic engine kickstart again. Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative Shockler.
Sir, on the, I'd imagine the 1,200 staff hours necessary were to keep records on application of herbicides for this person. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, the 1,200 hours was specifically to take, go from existing regulation, which requires them to record and keep on record on site their application. The 1,200 hours was to translate that information into a form that could then be submitted to the Department of Agriculture to comply with the record keeping, the record submission laws. So it was in addition to the many hours that they're required to put into the process right now to comply with existing regulations. So it was strictly additional person hours to file the use report to comply with the pesticide, what we call PURS, P-U-R-S.
May I
follow up?
And this is every year now, 1,200 hours? And if it is there a way that there could be some kind of log kept where if one did need to go back rather than consistently? You see where I'm trying to find an easier way to do this?
Madam Chair, Representative Stauffer, this was one of the things that really drove our desire to change some of the reporting requirements and allow applications of the same type of material for the same purpose within the same zip code to be aggregated. And so that did lead to some streamlining of the process. But to answer your question, yes, this was an annual addition to their staff. Now, again, they're unusual because they do about 30,000 applications a year, almost all within the urban environment. But that was to submit those to the department. Now, one of the problems that we have, I think all of you that are familiar with the current pesticide use reporting program, is that because we're in a temporary mode, the system cannot accept electronic batch downloading. That kind of a system would obviously help eliminate some of this kind of burden. But I think those are the kind of things that we really need to be looking at when we make these decisions, because if we don't have that data, we kind of pass a law oblivious to what its impact is on small business. And I don't think there's too many small businesses that are operating with a minimum staff that could absorb 1,200 additional person hours per year. I mean, that's about two-thirds of a full-time person.
Terry, I want to just stretch you just a little. I know you're not an economist, but how hard, in your opinion, would it be for an agency to have their economist, make some phone calls to try to determine before they do the rule how many man hours would be required? I mean, is that a six-month process or is that a one-week process?
Representative Close, you're right. I'm not an economist. But I can't imagine that it would be all that burdensome on an agency. Granted, it would require some additional staff time. But here again, I think it's incumbent upon the legislature to look at these burdens and say that it's not appropriate for an agency to pass a law without looking at the impact. I think those can be done quite economically. They might have to come up with a new process to do that, but I think it's unconscionable just to pass rules without really understanding the true economic impact. And to me, that's as big an economic impact on the state as the fiscal impact to the agency itself. If we start driving businesses out of Oregon or driving business away from Oregon, that has a tremendous fiscal impact that really is never even calculated because it's something that's never realized.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everyone who testified. I think this has been a fascinating discourse, and we will look forward to amendments on this bill, and we will intend to bring it back. So, thank you very much, and we are adjourned.